rays were sharp and clear as it swept beyond the women to the open gates of the fortress. They were grim-faced, hard-eyed, wolf-souled men, and the leader was the most frightening of them all. Yet they were captive. Incredibly, amazingly captive. The patrol was passed before the women thought to raise a hesitant cheer. They grabbed up their babes and their wash, following swiftly behind, not wanting to miss a moment of this. A guard lounging against the gate stared slack-jawed at what approached and called a ragged warning. Heads appeared on the palisade, a group formed near the gate, parting swiftly as the horses neared. Work stilled as word spread, and the inhabitants of Holyhood dropped what they were doing to come see what none of them had ever thought to witness. Captive Vikings. Men straight out of nightmares, led roped and helpless into their own Holyhood. By their own Sir Durward, for whom none had spared an appreciative thought until this very instant. It was a spectacle to stun, to be savored around the winter fires into distant years, told and retold to children yet unborn. Their cheers, no longer hesitant but full-throated and heartfelt, rose to heaven, passing on the way the high tower at the center of the keep, drifting by the open windows from which the scent of drying herbs floated, and causing the young woman within to look up curiously. "What is that, Miriam?" The old nurse paused in the midst of tying bundles of fragrant grasses together and cocked her head. "The people sound very excited, milady. Would you like me to find out what has happened?" Slender white hands laid a final rosebud inside a small press, screwed the lid on tightly, and set the press carefully aside. "If you would, I'd still like to get the oils done today." Miriam nodded, stood, and left the room. The Lady of Holyhood continued her work. Wolf Hackinson took a look around the cell into which he and his men had been thrust, nodded slowly, and sank down on the damp stone floor, stretching his long legs out before him. His men, ever vigilant to his mood, grinned. They sprawled out and relaxed.
"Damn!"
one-eyed Olaf muttered. He glanced at Wolf and sighed.
"It's 10 pelts I owe you."
"It is,"
Wolf agreed. His good humor was increasing steadily, and he was hard-pressed to conceal it, but conceal it he must, for they were all clearly visible through the crossed iron lattice windows on the double wooden doors that secured the cell. The room was large for a dungeon, and he suspected it was more commonly used for storage, as it no doubt would be again when the harvest was brought in. In the meantime, it served as a prison for the Vikings. Vikings caught unaware beside their apparently trapped vessel run aground on a sandbar. Vikings too far from their weapons to offer resistance. Vikings who had surrendered with scarcely a murmur. The mere thought almost made him burst out laughing. Truly Odin had blessed him with the rooster-brained Saxon in charge of the patrol. Scarcely had he seen so pride-blinded a man. It would have been the work of minutes to disarm and kill the lax Saxons. He and his men had done the same and more enough times to be confident of the outcome. But that would have left Holyhood yet to be taken. Its garrison was large, if poorly led. Its walls were high. The wolf valued the lives of those who followed him too much to risk them unnecessarily. Besides, his chosen method brought not merely defeat and loss, but profound insult, perfect to his purpose. He was mulling that over, his thoughts grimly occupied, when a clatter outside interrupted him. His eyes narrowed as he beheld Roosterbrain, accompanied by an audience of several knights, approaching the cell.
"Bold Vikings," Sir Durward sneered, "the terror of the north."
He threw back his head and laughed, an oddly shrill sound, more suited to a nervous girl. The men with him laughed too, perforce.
"Never have I seen such cowards,"
Durward exclaimed, his cheeks flushed, warming to his subject.
"They yielded like women. Indeed, I think perhaps they are women.
Viking women would be great hulking things, wouldn't they? More laughter greeted this witticism. Durwood put his hands on his hips and paced back and forth before the bars, gloating at his captives.
God's blood, you are pathetic specimens of men, to muster no resistance at all. Was not one of you eager to sup in Valhalla this night? Or did you have the sense to know not even your craven gods would welcome the likes of you?
The man beside Wolf stirred.
No,
Wolf murmured, his lips scarcely moving. The man stilled.
You'll rot in here, Durwood continued. You'll weep and beg for food. You'll fight over a rat's carcass. You'll watch each other sicken and die, and you'll pray for death.
But it won't come quickly, oh no. The enemies of Lord Hawk die slowly. You'll curse the mothers who gave you birth before your ends come.
When this, too, failed to raise any reaction, Durwood's flush darkened dangerously. He clamped his hands on the iron bars, his mouth twisting. Little flecks of saliva showed at the corners of his lips.
Mayhap I'll put you to fight each other for the amusement of my men. Whoever survives will have a little food, live a little longer. Which one of you will be the last to die?
His eyes swept over the men in the cell, coming to rest at last on Wolf.
You,
he said, not a question. He stared at the man who, even seated on the floor of the cell, his hands still bound, exuded deadly strength and calm. For just an instant, Durwood's eyes flickered.
Why didn't you...
Whatever thought he'd been about to pursue went unspoken. The door opened again at the top of the stairs leading to the cell. A shaft of golden sunlight penetrated the torch-lit gloom, and there, in that light, stood a woman. Wolf rose in a single, lithe motion. He moved toward the bars, the better to see her. The sun revealed little, only a dark silhouette, but he could make out that she was tall for a woman, willow slim and graceful. Her voice came floating through the doorway, low, soft, melodious, a voice to entice a man or soothe a child. It reverberated through him like a deep inner caress. He was shocked to realize that he actually shivered.
What is this, Sir Durwood? Why are these men being held?
The knight stiffened, hands dropping to his sides. His color paled, then returned in a rush.
They are Vikings, milady, he said in a voice that was almost steady. Their vessel ran aground, and they were caught scarcely a mile from here.
Did they offer you resistance?
No, milady. They surrendered at once, afraid to fight us.
I see. Then you don't actually know that they intended any harm.
Durwood took a deep, shuddering breath, fighting for calm. Wolf heard it and felt an instant's wry sympathy for him.
They are Vikings, milady, the knight repeated.
We welcome merchants from the Northlands. Is there reason to believe these men are not like them?
These are no merchants, Durwood protested. You've only to look at them.
Again, that flicker in his eyes, as though a thought stirred weakly. Wolf moved quickly, closer yet to the bars, distracting him. He needn't have bothered, for just then the Lady Kimbra came fully into the light, and for the space of several heartbeats, no man thought of anything at all. Distantly, Wolf heard the collective intake of breath from the others in the cell, but he was too riven by his own surprise. The world abounded with stories, few of them even remotely true. One held that the renowned Hawk of Essex had a sister, Kimbra by name, who was likely the most beautiful woman in all of Christendom, a woman of such loveliness that her own brother hid her away, lest men fight to possess her. Wolf had long since dismissed that tale, assuming it most probably meant she was no more than middling pretty. Now confronted by the reality and the slow, stumbling recovery of his own reason, poor thing that it had become, he stared at her. Chestnut hair shot through with gold, tumbled in thick waves almost to her knees. Her eyes, blue as the sea beneath summer sun and thickly fringed, were set